This is a recording of Dr. Tom Rozelle for Sunday, September 4th, 2016. You can listen to this program live every Sunday afternoon from 12 noon to 1 p.m. right here on 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
Views expressed on this program are not the views of 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
The information provided on Dr. Tom Rozelle Live by Dr. Tom Rozelle, D.C., interview guests, show co-hosts, or substitute hosts is not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. It is for general information purposes only. Information from this broadcast should not replace the appropriate consultation and examination process by a licensed physician. Always consult your own physician prior to changing any current medical directive or prescription.
Dr. Tom Rozelle Live, right now, on 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
And welcome live to Dr. Tom Rozelle. This is obviously not Dr. Tom Rozelle Live again, and this is Stephanie Pina. I'm filling in for Dr. Rozelle as he's on week two of his vacation. He'll be back with us next week, but in the meantime, we are going to be taking your questions, talking about a couple of great topics in our upcoming lecture as well, and Ageless Health 2016 is well on its way. But if you have any questions for us or want to chime in on what we're talking about, feel free to give us a call here. The number is 888-630-9625. That number is 888-630-9625. And I have a guest with me live in the studio today, and his presentation is going to be this upcoming Wednesday, the 7th. And I have Dr. Scott Lamp. Hello, Dr. Lamp.
Oh, good afternoon, Stephanie. How are you?
Doing good. Glad to have you back here. We're going to take over one more week before Dr. Rozelle kicks us out.
Yeah, the inmates are running the asylum here today, so
exactly.
So we got one week
to create havoc, and then we got to give it back. So
there you go.
But this Wednesday night, 7 p.m. at the Rozelle Center for Healing on September 7th, you're going to be talking about chronic pain management. A very good topic, because we know many people come into the office with pain issues, whether or not that's the thing that drives them in or the thing that we end up addressing. So we're going to talk about that today and how it links to different diseases and health conditions, and how pain management can be a complicated thing to address other than just trying to knock it out with drugs and surgery. When we talk about pain management, Dr. Lamp,
okay,
is pain a pain to treat?
Pain's definitely a pain, and that's one of the things I like working at our office, because it's a multidisciplinary office where you come in with a lot of different ideas, from acupuncture for yourself, nutrition and chiropractic aspect, some rehabilitation type elements are very, very important in this kind of work. I mean, you know, these are things that are pains. I would say, if you talk about like how many people are affected by it, it's probably a third of the United States, around 100 million. You know, I was looking at an article here from the American Academy of Pain Medicine, and they're saying about 1.5 billion people in the world suffer from it. And if you look at those numbers, it's even more so in the United States. So 100 million, a third of us. And generally, when you talk about this, we're talking about chronic pain, something that's gone over beyond 3 months duration. You know, pain that can be things that from an illness or an injury, or you have no real initiating origin to the problem. It could be described as burning. It could be an achy or an electrical discomfort. Fatigue could be associated, loss of sleep. And these things perpetuate themselves, so they add into the psychological aspect. We get into depression. Immune system seems to weaken. And all these things kind of snowball effect to the point where almost we can't even get our work done.
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point. When we talk all the time about treating structural, chemical, and mental, emotional, I mean, pain management has to address all of those, because the longer pain exists, the more structural issues you see, the more dysfunction you see. Then all of a sudden you start to see the emotional component come in. You know, even if patients don't tell us about that, we still can see it, that they're acting differently because their pain management isn't properly being addressed.
Yeah, and pain erodes on you a lot. And I think even things like when we talk about even motion, how motion gets into relationship to like our bodies being able to move and whatnot, we have things called endorphins. And those things are natural painkillers. You know, if anybody's out there who's done some running before and they get that natural runner's high and they feel good about running, and sometimes when you take them away from that, there's athletic depression associated with that, because they can't run, they really get down on themselves. And so when an individual can't move, and can't get that endorphin aspects, then all it is pain signals coming in. So all of a sudden that's going to be wearing on your personality, your emotional aspects, and start bringing you down. So, and there's a lot of elements associated with that. When that happens, it also seems to affect and ties into our immune system. And all of a sudden now we're getting sick all the time. So the chronicity of this is it's really kind of hits in a lot of different factors. And like you were saying in the beginning, you really have to hit it from multiple sides.
Yeah, systemic approach, really looking at what's going on. And a lot of times we have patients come in that, you know, have a certain diagnosis that may be pain related, like fibromyalgia, which we'll talk a little bit throughout the day. And I know you'll definitely talk about on Wednesday.
Yeah.
And that might be related to another health condition, or that the other health condition is really the problem. And
lots of overlaps.
Right. A lot of overlaps. And so that makes it really difficult. And then you tell people, oh, we want to get that normal movement back, but they're in pain, so they can't move.
Right.
So they can't get those endorphins. And so it's a vicious cycle, really, on how to manage this properly. And unfortunately, out there now, it's interesting when I look up some of the research, you know, the types of medications that people are given are basically, you know, pain meds that are going to block pain, antidepressants, which, you know, help out, I guess, to some extent with their thoughts is the psychological aspect of it. And then they also give anticonvulsions. Yeah. So we've had patients come in on anticonvulsion medications and for pain management that totally didn't need to be on that. So it's very interesting when you're looking at pain management that we have to look at the whole body, find that cause, diagnose things properly. And sometimes that involves, you know, basic medical laboratory studies and muscle testing and orthopedic testing.
Yeah, if you just take a look at the structural aspect, or actually let me take a different aspect, because we got some things coming up in Ageless Health that's interesting about how to be younger and how to, you know, be kind of find the fountain in youth, so to speak. And you take a look at individuals that are, you know, living to 100, and what do they have in common? And one of the things is, it's interesting, they have a stable family background, but they're always constantly moving. People that are in countries like Okinawa and in Italy, they're always moving in a sense of aspect. They have a purpose. And again, if you stop moving, you stop losing purposes. I mean, and especially in chronicity, this doesn't add years to your life. It breaks things down. So movement is such an important aspect in so many different ways. We're going to talk about certain things in regards to some of the major players in chronic pain management. One is also trying to work on, like, is it an infection of some sort? Is there microbes? And that can go across a lot of different things, from things like, you know, Lyme, to is there an autoimmune disease that's associated with another type of critter in the system, to something maybe like kind of like mold or yeast that might be a play a part. Chemical exposures. And a lot of these things, what they do is they block the communication of the body in a lot of different ways. One in the sense of if inflammation's in there, I can't circulate well. Things don't circulate there, so the messages don't get through. You've got situations where lymphatic, it's backed up. That's kind of your sewer system, and that doesn't flow well. So communication levels are blocked up, or enzymes, like, for example, in like heavy metals. Heavy metals can shut down enzyme systems in the body, so the body doesn't function and break things down the way they're supposed to. So you got to go look at all these different things or players. We need oxygen. We need lots of oxygen to kind of run systems and circulation. If we don't have that, then things start to go awry, whatever that system is. Let's do it.
They become a pain.
There you go. I'll learn to speak sometime soon.
Well, and we think about pain too. I mean, essentially, one, it's to some extent a normal reaction, because the body's basically trying to give us that heads up that something isn't correct in the system. It needs to be fixed. But what we're talking about with chronic pain management is when that starts to go overboard, chronically, always there, nothing seems to be affecting it. And especially when people come in and they say, you know, I've been on the medications, I've done the therapies, I've done this, that, I just don't get it. And that's where I think especially we have to start looking at what are the causes that you don't normally think about with pain management, which goes back to things like you mentioned.
Yeah.
We're going to go to the phones real quick. Chris, how can I help you?
Yes, hi, how you doing?
Doing good. How about you?
Just a question. My family has inherited shaking in our hands and tremors.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandfather was told by one of his doctors that, you know, us being Middle Eastern people, basically, that it runs genetically through most people from Italy and Greece. And he said the high levels of B12 actually negates that. And I just wanted to see what you thought about that, because sometimes my grandfather got older, it did turn into some pain of some sort, but it's just, I think we're a high energy type of people, and I don't know if that's what the doctor told my grandfather is true, or I want to see what you think about that.
There's information, I don't have it right in front of me, but I think one of the things is on the genetic aspect, there is some places, there's some things where they call when there's a, what they call a genetic SNP. And what a SNP is kind of like an alteration in the gene sequence. They have some things that are called heterozygous and one called homozygous, and those are big terms, but heterozygous means I've gotten a bad part from one of the parents and not from the other, and homozygous, I've got bad parts from both. There is some SNPs with that, that could be associated with, that are lacking, or need even more cofactors in the body, being B12 being one of them. And there's might be some other elements there. But the last time I did some research on that, there was some connection to it. I don't have that right in front of me. Tom would be a great one for me to talk to on that particular one. But there is some things I've just recently seen. I just don't have the information in front of me for that. It's a sequencing that's not quite there that can actually can promote tremors.
Now, is there any long-term damage? Because I've never seen any. I've never seen it hurt anybody in my family. It's just something that it was more of an aggravation than anything
well,
else.
Well, an aggravation, but also whatever the effects would be in regards to not having those cofactors in other systems. That's the other thing you would have to take a look at.
Okay.
What you could do is you could send us, I guess we can send an email or something like that. We can follow up. I can give you that exact information. We can follow up with that for you.
Great. Thank you for your call, Chris. You know, it's interesting, his Colin basically reminded me too, and when we bring it back to pain management, you know, that overstimulation of the nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
So that basically things are firing way more quickly than they need to. They're not kind of having that break. And another
They don't inhibit.
So right. Essentially that, you know, can be one way of looking at pain management as well, is going, how often is it firing? And when we get that signal that something's not right,
right.
Is it just increasing, or is there anything that can inhibit it naturally? So definitely looking at the nervous system's just response to stimulus.
Yeah. So again, this is like an inflammatory aspect. I mean, how do you can create pain? You can create pain by putting direct pressure on a nerve, or you can put like an inflammatory aspect around that nerve. And if you're constantly doing something, it keeps on flaring that point. So it just constantly flares. I think one of the things that's interesting, when we got to look at this, we got to look at how the nervous system is intruded upon and it creates some problems. I'll make a segue, kind of like when you talk about concussions. Another thing that happens with that element is when somebody gets a concussion, there's some proteins from the brain that are released in the bloodstream. They're reabsorbed in the bloodstream. When that protein's reabsorbed, there's a possibility that the body might use that as a foreign object. And as being a foreign object, it goes back to the brain saying, oh, you're a foreign object, so I'm going to attack you because now we've got an autoimmune response. And now here's something that kind of feeds back on itself all the time. And one of the problems, again, we did a concussion seminar about a month or so ago. One of the interesting things with that is that every time you get inflamed, the body will go and look at the usual suspects. And if you've got tagged on the brain, then you can get that tagged. So one of the problems with that is maybe the possibility of Alzheimer's after a period of time with concussions. That's the big thing with the NFL now, talking about all those things that are happening with these people.
Well, and you think about it too, I mean, like a lot of people, we're talking about the kind of mental, emotional aspect that
right.
pain management can have. But, you know, if the body's kind of constantly dealing with something that it just can't move on from, no matter what the source, what the cause, you know, that's going to add additional stress. And it,
right.
we always go back to the adrenals and how the body deals with chronic stress. Well,
right.
the adrenals are built in there for one reason, but if we're constantly having to stress them out, per se, because
right.
of pain management, it's not going to help out the rest of the health and what they're supposed to do.
Yeah, I kind of think as the look at the adrenals is kind of like the fireman.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we'll probably grab that next segment here.
We're going to be back in just a minute talking with Dr. Scott Lamp here in studio, and he's going to be doing chronic pain management on September 7th at 7 p.m. Make sure you call the Result Center for Healing, 703-698-7117, to reserve your spot. We'll be back in just a moment. And welcome back to Dr. Tom Rizal Live. We are live in studio. This is Stephanie Pina, licensed acupuncturist and naturopath. And I am with Dr. Scott Lamb, chiropractor and applied kinesiologist. And we're here talking about chronic pain management, a very important topic. A lot of people come into even their primary care office looking for advice on this, but then they come to us and they kind of wonder, what else can I do? This isn't working. You know, as Dr. Rizal says, I tried, I applied, it didn't work out so great, so what can we do now? So that's going to be the lecture topic that he's going to have on Wednesday, September 7th at 7 p.m. And if you want to come and listen to this, I would definitely call the office and sign up early. You can always leave a message since it's Labor Day weekend, and they'll get back to you on Tuesday. And so call the office at 703-698-7117 and say you want to attend this lecture. And also, if you know someone that has issues with chronic pain management and want to invite them along too, sometimes that's a great way to get people into the office so they can ask some questions in a easy setting because they know they're surrounded by people that are also there with similar types of questions and stuff too. Like I said, there's no wrong question, no silly question. And this is definitely a chance to kind of cover a lot of different bases of things because Dr. Lamp is the key person on this today. So he'll stick around and ask any question or answer any question that's out there. So we're going to talk a little bit about this kind of cyclical pattern of pain. So it's not just this one-time pain. Something goes, maybe you're in an accident or there's an injury and then it slowly gets better. But this idea that things keep circling back around and why the body's not able to basically take care of that pain the first time and let the body heal. But why is it that it keeps circling over and over and over and then bringing in other systems of the body and affecting other influences of your life too? Dr. Lamp?
I think I wanted to, just to go back on the last segment as we had to kind of phase out, talk about the adrenal elements and I'd mention, the aspect of the adrenal system, your stress mechanism system that kind of works like the fireman in your body. It helps put out the fire. But, you know, the biggest thing with stress aspects, we're supposed to be designed to have stress for about 30 seconds, and then we're supposed to relax. That's not something that happens in the DC area very much, especially if you're driving in traffic and stuff like that's around this area. But one of the things is that gets exhausted. So it's kind of like your fireman who's supposed to be able to have this fire truck with water to put out the fire all of a sudden doesn't have the energy anymore and starts breaking down. And what's interesting with that is where the stress mechanism goes back and affects the physical element. Some of the materials or the things that support the adrenal system also help support your ligament system of your body. And so absence, it makes the joint a little bit unstable where ligaments hold bones to bone. And so you have problems there. Plus, if you get inflammation in that area from a trauma of some sort and it's not there to put out the fire, so it can linger. So now you got those kind of things that play in part. One thing I also will mention too, it is kind of like how the body kind of loads up on things and protects itself. Another thing that stress does is it wants to protect itself at all times. It's kind of like the major kind of reflex of the body is survival. No matter what, I'm going to survive. So I'm going to steal from Peter to pay Paul just so I can make sure that happens. In the long term, that might not be so beneficial sometimes, but if it's in the moment and you need to survive, that's what the body's going to do. And that sometimes also happens structurally. We have these sensors in our joints that take on, you know, they feel at the loads what the body's placing on, and if it feels it doesn't want to do the load correctly, then what it's going to do is going to shunt or move or compensate its pulling or its muscles to another way so it doesn't get that kind of sensation. Well, now we have an alteration. Now we're not walking the right way. And these could be things that could be from a sprained ankle that you never quite recovered from, and all of a sudden now I'm walking a little altered. And it doesn't really bother me. I can rotate my foot in a little bit. It's not a big deal. Then all of a sudden, there's been a little bit more pressure on the knee. So now I have to twist my hip, and my hip drops down on one side. And then there's a cascading events. And it's almost like the Leaning Tower of Pisa. The base is starting to fall off, and you got all these other things, and all the other floors are off angle. And if you don't fix that particular one, and all of a sudden you get pain and all over these places, and you don't know where it came from. So physically, alignment plays a big part over a long period of time. So that's one of the things to kind of take a look at in regards to that. The other thing is as Stephanie was talking about, is things in regards to activity, physical activity. So let's say the physical activity is altered. So I got maybe a tendency to be some avoidance of doing that particular type element. And then if I avoid that, then my conditioning starts to degress. I don't sit there and have really I progressively lack condition. I lose muscle tone. I'm not putting stresses on the body that they're supposed to. And then pain with decreasing activity starts to happen. That comes through a cycle where then we have further activity avoidance and then further deconditioning and just kind of hammers the pain that comes through. Now we have the pain going on in the psychological aspect. Now we have anxiety. We have the stress on that. And the mood starts to drop, and then we start having things with depression. And then it feeds back in. So those two things are just cycling around with them continuously. You've got to break the cycle.
I think one of the interesting you kind of mentioned with especially structural alignment and stuff, yeah, too, is the fact that we do have two other types of pain that we don't normally think about that you, yeah, mentioned. That compensation pain.
Right.
You know, trying to shift, you know, even when you say you want to shift your weight.
It's not
to the
even
other
pain.
Hip,
it's just, you don't even know it.
You're starting to use other parts of the body, like you said, to compensate for where there really is an issue. And then also referral pain. And in, right, a lot of that times, you know, we're talking a lot of structure stuff, but we see a lot of referral pain with organ disease, organ,
exactly,
issues. You know, we talk about the gallbladder a lot and the fact that people think it's just going to hurt over the gallbladder. Well, no, it's in the back by their shoulder and it's lower on their abdomen. And, mm-hmm, there's a lot of other areas that give us signals to kind of say that this isn't just a localized issue. This is something else going on,
yeah,
that really needs to be looked at, addressed, diagnosed,
right,
properly. And it may take a multiple step approach in order to treat this. So this is what your lecture is going to be all about. And,
yep,
people definitely need to sign up early because I have a feeling you're going to have a full house.
We're going to take demos. Lots of demos.
Lots of demos. Oh, yeah, my goodness. See, hopefully I'm not part of that one.
You're but, signed up.
Uh-oh. We're going to be back after this break, and you're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live.
Dr. Tom Rozelle Live continues now on 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
And welcome back to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. This is Stephanie Pina and Dr. Scott Lamp live in the studio. We're here to take your questions and calls. And we are talking about chronic pain management. If you have a question for us and you want to call in, the number again is 888-630-9625. That's 888-630-9625. And if you wanted to see us live in person, other than our in-house lectures that come to Ageless Health 2016, should be a good one. We're changing up the format a little bit. We're doing it as a nighttime lecture over at the Angelica. And I believe it's $59 to sign up. So call in and reserve your spot. Related to almost pain management, your topic this year, Dr. Lamp, is?
I'm going to say how sitting is the new smoking.
Oh. Okay. And I think I have using energy or understanding energy to strengthen and heal as well, too. So two big topics that are going to be coming back to back on that Thursday night. So please join us live at Angelica for Ageless Health 2016. And you can either sign up online at rozellecare.com, or you can also call the office to sign up for Dr. Lamp's lecture this Wednesday night and tell them you want to sign up for Ageless Health. So we'll see you hopefully both times. Before we get into the serious stuff again, talking about pain management, during the break we all had a discussion with Dr. Lamp that he had to define what demonstrations at a pain management lecture really meant.
And it's not designed to hurt. We're actually designing to actually kind of like demonstrations for compensation. So we'll show, we could probably take people from the audience and whatnot and show where the compensations are done. And they're very, very easy, gentle, and they're just kind of like muscle tests that we can do and show for demonstration purposes. We might even do some nutritional things to show too for things like, or actually oxygen is another one we might do to check for oxygen saturation of the body, because that's important for healing and making sure circulation's there.
Okay, so now we don't have to worry about showing up and coming back with pain. And,
that's right, no.
Okay, what hurts more when you hit this arm or that arm? Or good to know. But on a serious note, one of the interesting things and why people come into the Rozelle Care for Healing and want to go to these lectures too is really looking for those alternatives, or, you know, there's basically that opioid epidemic crisis that's going on in the U.S. right now. And it's come up numerous times on, you know, even in political stuff lately, that there's a major issue in states where opioid dependence and addiction,
yeah,
is becoming a huge thing. And part of that is also because of prescription opioid medications, not just recreational use of it, but it's just easier to get, easier to hold on,
right,
to. And the use for opioids in chronic pain management is very abundant. And
I think one of the things too is sensitivity. I think you desensitize the body, so you end up kind of jacking up more and more, and then all of a sudden I need another one, lowering down the immune system over a period of time. And what you're doing is also, if you're getting into things like steroids too, what happens to the adrenal gland? We talked about that before as a fireman. It's another way to say, okay, we're going to shut the fireman out and we're just going to be dependent on this drug. So when we want to go back to the body to kind of do its own healing, he's not available.
Yeah. And then people come and question, well, you know, the injection worked for a couple, you know, I was supposed to work for a couple months and it only worked for a week or two. And then do I go back and get another one, or why is my body still in pain? And so then we have to sit down and have that conversation that, you know, putting the Band-Aid over the, yeah, the issue is really not the way of addressing the overall body and the way it's healing.
Yeah, so what is the cause there? I mean, that's the really type of thing. And there's so many different elements. Like I said before, there's so many different inputs. We haven't really talked too much about nutritional aspects, but there's balances in regards to essential fatty acids that we're supposed to be having. There's omega-6 versus omega-3s and what the appropriate balances are. That plays a big part of it. Are we in a kind of society that eats foods that are actually pro-inflammatory? The more processed, the food additives. And what do these things, foods, do? I mean, again, Tom always pushes the aspect of everything close to being organic as much as possible. What you do is you have clear routes for the food to break down. It doesn't block things. It doesn't attach to cells. It doesn't block receptor sites. It doesn't do those things. That's the whole purpose of it. If you let the body communicate, it does some amazing things. And more than anything, that's what we do at our office. We try to get everything so the body's communicating well. It has the nervous system, to the acupuncture system, to the nutritional system. The more things you put in that blocks the way, then compensations start happening. And it doesn't have to be compensation, like we said, physical. It'll be compensations chemically.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, you know, thinking like the cheeseburger and fries doesn't right. necessarily, that's another Band-Aid.
Yeah.
It's just a physical one we got to eat. And,
feels yeah. good at the time you're doing it, then maybe a half an hour later,
right.
maybe not so much.
And we've seen, you know, when you're talking about the way foods kind of increase inflammation, I mean, we've seen that, not even looking at pain management, but heart health.
Right.
The way fish oils kind of started to take over, and the fact that they affect the inflammatory cycle. Mm-hmm. The way other, you know, decreasing blood sugars and keeping blood sugars more normal, we've seen that was helping out with diabetic neuropathy pain.
Right.
So this covers a lot of different types of pain, not just the physical pain that you're going to be talking about.
Right. We'll even dabble a little bit and look at electronic magnetic frequencies. Electromagnetic frequencies might have some effect on also inflammatory elements. Sleep. Big thing. And then it's actually, if you're not getting enough sleep, the body doesn't repair. And actually what it does is accelerates the inflammatory cycle. So that's a big thing.
So when we talk about just this year, the CDC actually released that report that basically said, because of this opioid issue and the fact that so many, so many people are coming in with opioid addiction issues, and that it's just so prevalent, you know, they're recommending actually looking at non-pharmaceutical treatments.
Right.
Including chiropractic, acupuncture, nutrition,
massage.
They're including yoga, all of these, things. And it has to be included part of pain management. And this is coming also out. The AMA actually supports this too, the American Medical Association, right. because they realize it's not just an issue in the clinics and in pain management centers, but it's an issue for anyone who can get any kind of pain medication.
What you're touching on is psychoneuroimmunology, which actually I think at Aegis Health, I had to give a talk about that last year. And I think one of the aspects of that is really kind of like, it's amazing how we feel mm-hmm. can actually turn on and off genes. And that's the whole aspect of that. And I think, like, for example, we talked about yoga and Tai Chi. You have to have something you can focus to kind of get your mind focused on a single thing to kind of clear the other elements out of your head. You have to have some type of movement because, again, circulation is very, very important. And so those kind of aspects, and also proper breathing. You know, a lot of people don't breathe well. They kind of shallow breathe. They don't use the diaphragm. You know, sitting for long periods of time. Sometimes it's hard to open up your diaphragm when you're sitting for long periods of time. So now I don't get oxygen sorting through. So psychoneuroimmunology is looking at the aspect of those things in regards to how it affects the mental aspect versus how it comes back and affects the physical element. And Norman Cousins' branch out of UCLA, they have a specialized program that deals with that exactly. And they've been showing it actually turns on and off genes, turns on the good genes so the body can heal better, especially if you're looking at things in regards to people recovering from breast cancer. We saw if they do these for about 3 to 6 weeks, the yoga, cognitive behavioral therapies like yoga and Tai Chi and so on and so forth, transcendental meditation, those kind of things, they have less depression, they have less pain, they sleep better. But once they are off of it for a week or two, they start coming, things start coming back again. So it's got to be a consistent type thing.
Well, and I see it too, is that there's also, we talk about these patterns and the cycles and stuff, and you see this also with patients who are coming in and they've experienced some kind of PTSD, mm-hmm. and the fact that that can almost, that recreation in the mind can trigger that muscle memory and exacerbate and other things as well, too. So you see this as not just a physical issue, mm-hmm. but like I said, it goes back to having to treat the whole thing. And is the mental issue what's triggering the pain? And if you give someone just a pain medication, that's not going to trigger their mental emotional response. Right. So it becomes very difficult. There is a, out of that same CDC study, it's interesting, it said in 2012, healthcare providers wrote 259 million prescriptions for opioid pain medication, enough for every adult in the United States to have a bottle of pills.
Oh my God.
That's why there's an issue. That's why people come to us and ask questions on the show and come to the lectures and need to come see Dr. Lamp, but.
Well, the thing is also like 80% of the prescribed medications in the world, 80% of them, United States. It's a crazy number.
Yes. We're going to go to the phones real quick. Let's go ahead and take this call. Ernie from Alexander, how are you?
Hello.
Hey, Ernie.
Yeah, my name's Ernie. I'm in Alexandria. I've had several back surgeries, and my particular problem, they fused together L4 and 5 mm-hmm. on the left side and L5 and S1 on the left side. One of the bone spikes that they put between 5 and S1 broke, and it ended up causing some numbness on the S1 nerve that runs down the side of my left leg and, yep. and to my toes. It's been a couple of years since the last surgery, and it's slowly but surely getting more and more, not so much painful, but aggravating, to where I feel like my toes are very tightly taped to my foot.
Right.
Is there anything that can be done with nerve that scar tissues, I assume, is adhering to? And I mean, is there anything that can be done short of another surgery?
Well, the best thing is also we have to take an exam of you. So I'm going to put that first out. So examine what's going on, what the imbalances are. That's the first aspect. We talked about earlier before about compensations, and sometimes the compensations aren't found necessarily. Again, when you go to somebody and let's say you have surgery, you have fusion, what happens is the joint above and below now become hypermobile. And then you have to strengthen the core to actually match that so that doesn't happen. But that's usually what happens when you have one surgery, then another surgery along the way. The other thing is how well or how chronic the nerve is being been affected over a period of time. The longer out, the more scar tissue, the harder it is to work with. But there are other things that can be done with it. Acupuncture is one of the things that can actually help stimulate that and bring that back. Circulation is one of the things we can work on doing that. Postural exercises, there's also postural positioning type exercises that actually help and work with that. But it's almost something you have to take a look at in the office to see what the extent of that damage is, to really get again an idea of it. And also if you have any films or something like that, it would be able to be helpful to take a look at. It's kind of hard to do it on the air, by that. But
understand.
We've had people had success, but again, everybody's a little bit different.
Sure. It's not an exact science.
No.
Well, it's
okay. Sounds like I need to make an appointment. Hey, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, you bet.
I think what he brings up a good point, too, and we see this often in the office, is people come in and they've gotten consultations, whether they need to have different surgeries like back surgery as well, and all of a sudden they're going, what can I do to avoid it? And then what do I do afterwards? And sometimes we do have to have that sit-down conversation, says this is what things look like structurally. And we had a recent patient that we've had a conversation. We were kind of saying, here's the reality of whether or not surgery is necessary.
Right.
So what we try to also tell patients is if you can do things preventatively before the surgery, you're also getting your body in the best possible shape and you're healing in the best possible shape going into surgery, and then you can use some of the stuff too afterwards to make sure that there's less inflammation, less scar tissue. You get the mobility back as soon as you possibly can. So we have to think now, presently, which is also one of the big things with pain management, because everyone wants it treated right now, and what's that long-term goal as well too. And those can be sometimes two different plans, and that can be it could involve a lot of different therapies.
So a lot of different things, like we talked about, nutrition, structure, emotional aspects that play tie into. Scar tissue is another big one that plays a part. I'll give you an instance. I've had a patient that bilateral hip surgery, basically a dancer doing for 20 years, come in with excruciating pain from a 0 to 10, you know, probably a 12. Try to do some physical therapy with it, couldn't work. found out it was actually the scar. And what happens with scar tissue adjacent to the scar, perpendicular to the scar, is sometimes you get nerve endings that sometimes can be knotted up. And what happens is they start creating a reaction that makes the muscles underneath tighten everything else underneath. Just loosening it up, he was 95% better in one visit. But it was the scar that was doing it. So scar tissues are always things to take a look at. And sometimes you can also even have hidden scars, like the best example I can think about is kind of like a sprained ankle. You don't see the scar because you've not had any surgery on it or whatever, but some scar tissue can form on the outside part of that foot. And if you don't roll out or get that scarring out of there, sometimes you can be repeating that same process of that sprained ankle.
Right. And that's why, especially with ankles, you see people, once they have a pretty bad sprain, they're, you know, most likely to have another one again under less circumstances.
Yeah. The muscles on the outside of the leg, down where the fibula is. The fibula is the bone on the outside, where muscle attachments and things go to. There's something called peroneal muscles, which kind of like stabilize your foot so it doesn't roll out or roll in, I should say. And so if those are not reset, again, probably three times this week I've had somebody come in with old sprained ankles. Just as a side note, they came in for something else. But he said, can you do anything with ankles? I said, yeah. And he said, now it's like they don't have any problem with it anymore. But it needs to be reset. It's like almost like a neurological insult that just kind of gets shocked, and you got to reset the system.
All right, we're going to go back to the phones. Barbara from Bethesda, how can we help you?
Good afternoon. I want to inquire about omegas, which you had referenced. I want to know what specific percentage, like a DHA, if I'm saying it right, to the EPA should be, what percentage of each in the fish oils. And the second thing is, if people cannot take the fish oil, if they have the vegetarian type omega, I quote omega, would the percentage be the same?
We'll both comment on this one. So I'll talk on the first part because it's interesting. I've worked with a couple of vegan patients who, you know, this became an issue with, and there are other types. There's also plant-based oils, you know, some of them are in liquid form.
Algae-based too.
Then they're in liquid form, which is usually you don't have to worry about whether or not it's a gelatin cap as well. So sometimes that becomes an issue, just the capsule that it's in. But plant-based, krill also, and algae-based as well are good. And then there's also, it depends on what you're using the oil for, because different types of oils are going to have a different percentage of EPA and DHA, as you mentioned. Those are the two components that break down from omega-3 and omega-6s. One tends to be not pro-inflammatory, but they have a little bit more of inflammation, blocking factors. And the other ones basically have, more, I'd say almost more hormone binding factors.
Right.
So, Dr. Lamp, do you want to add in real quick?
I think we're going to go cut out. We'll answer that as we come back, I think. We'll just do a quick answer on that, if you don't mind. So I think we're cutting out.
Okay, so we're going to answer your question. Hold on, Barbara, and we'll be right back.
105.9 FM and AM 630, WMAL.
And we're back at Dr. Thomas Live, here to answer your questions. And we're going to continue talking about omega-3s. And Dr. Lamp's going to tell us a little bit about that DHEA to EPA ratio, or other way around. And we'll take it from there.
Yeah, the EPA and DHEA, it kind of changes through life aspects. So if you got a longer child that's developing up to about 5 years of age, the DHEA is generally the better, a higher ratio to the EPA, but that changes between 5 and 65, also if you have some mental cognitive problems, EPA needs to be up. So anywhere from a 2-to-1 to 1.5-to-1 ratio of EPA to DHA is probably a good way to take a look at it. Also, if you have a child that's having some developmental issues or anxiety type issues, and the EPA can be a little bit higher up when they're younger. So that would be the answer to that question.
Yeah, a lot of times it also depends on your sources too. The plant-based sources tend to be a little higher in omega-6s,
right?
Versus like the fish oils tend to be higher in omega-3s, and that's where you're seeing a lot of the, especially the heart health studies,
right,
are more the omega-3s that they're looking at. So that's why they always refer back to the fish oils being the ones that you see the most of, the heard about the most of, but they're definitely plant-based sources as well, too.
And I think also with the krill, also, when you talk about certain things, when I talk about omega-3s, it's also good to sometimes keep them refrigerated.
Mm-hmm.
They will can get bad. You don't know if it's something that's been sitting on the shelf for a while, a period of time. So that's kind of a good idea to think about. They used to say that if it starts to change or become rancid, it'll actually freeze in the freezer. It's a way to kind of test it. So it's kind of a thought process there.
a lot of times I have patients that just come in and kind of say, you know, they're just not sitting well, and they say, I get the fish burps. And
it smells.
Yeah, that's usually your indication that something's not quite right. So.
It's usually something you get to what you pay for. Usually a good quality type omega-3s is usually a concern. Sometimes you get something. Everybody's uncle's putting them out there. Mm-hmm. The question is what batch it is, because there's really only a few distilleries out in the world that actually make them. So all these companies are buying from these other places. And what grade are they buying? Are they buying A-grade or E-grade? You don't know.
And also, you got to look at the mercury content as well, too. And a lot of the good companies that put them out there use the very small fish, so they don't have the exposure as everything, too. So
versus tuna and stuff like that, yeah.
You know, from a Chinese medicine standpoint, it's a yin fluid, so that fluid is, like, improving blood flow and stuff, too, and through the body. So it definitely can help out with pain management as well, too.
Awesome.
Dr. Lamb, why don't you talk to us a little bit about what Wednesday night, the September 7th, 7 p.m. lecture is going to be about? Who should go? Since we said just about everybody, because if they have a body, they have probably
body,
experienced pain at some point.
If you're breathing, I think it's probably a good place to be. That's going to be one of the things there. We're going to talk about the aspect of how everything kind of crosses over. We're going to talk about autoimmune type problems. We'll touch on some Lyme. We'll touch on some things with fibromyalgia too, because they can cover all three of those elements. And also what's important to maintain, to get away from inflammation, what are those things to actually kind of decrease pain. And also the possibilities of just doing some demonstrations using some a way to kind of test your oxygen. If I get them in time, I've got some nitric oxide strips that I'm trying to get in to actually test people there too. I'm not sure if they're in time with it, depending on the male situation, but I'm trying to get those in too.
See, I'm curious to know, since you're the gadget guy that Dr. Rizal always refers you at, are there going to be any gadgets?
Well, that's the nitric oxide and the oxygen.
The gadgets and demonstrations are going hand in hand for pain management.
But I think one of the management, at least the muscular type thing we'll test on is kind of taking a look at how the body adapts to certain things and how it can change. And it's a very simple testing we can do, and it can show you what happens when you alter foot mechanics and things of that nature and how the rest of the body can suffer because of it.
So it definitely seems like, you know, reviewing those kind of causes, talking a lot about the different overlaps between one type of medical condition and another type. So sometimes even if you're not thinking about them in chronic pain, but even if it's acute pain, some of these things that we're going to talk about
be beneficial.
Are beneficial as well, too. So make sure you sign up. Again, that number for the Rizal Center for Healing, we are located off of Arlington Boulevard at 8550 Arlington Boulevard, Suite 325 in the Red Cross Building. You want to call to reserve your spot and get there early. That number is going to be 703-698-7117. That's 703-698-7117. And while you're calling to reserve your spot for Dr. Lamb's lecture, you can also sign up, or even, I think, save a little bit off if you do online for Ageless Health 2016, which we'll both be at. And hopefully you'll be able to join us at both of those. I know next week Dr. Rizal is going to be back in office, which is he's not back in office yet, but he'll be back in studio. He's still got a little bit more time.
He'll be in studio. I think he's like the 12th or 13th or something like that. He's going to be back. Yeah.
He let us still run rampant for another week. So basically he'll bring up another topic as always. And I think the best thing about this show is really that information that people can figure out. Do they have other options? Do they have other things they can think about? I do just want to take a quick second before we leave to do a shout out to, I lost a personal friend of mine, Deborah Doc Watson, this weekend, who was the one that basically got me on the radio for the first time in Arizona. She had a health food store and a post office that we did, and brought me on the radio and her radio show that talked about natural health, about stress for the first time, which was very stressful. Mm-hmm. So I know she's still broadcasting somewhere else, and I wish her all the best. We'll see you all next week.
God bless her.
And we'll see you then. Thanks for listening.